I hope you're in the mood. I'm in the mood, so it could be good.
It's time for another show from Colin Jones, the Reasonable Adventurer. Time for you to take another step towards creating your own opportunities for satisfaction.
And it is a huge welcome to you all to episode 88. We are getting closer to 100, aren't we? Of the Reasonable Adventurer. Well, it's been an interesting week. It's mostly been one of the quickest weeks of my life. I'm actually still pinching myself, trying to ask myself, where did that week go? And the work that I had scheduled for this week, as much as I attempted it, it didn't seem to get complete. There were a couple of jobs that just took a lot longer than they really should have. I wonder if your world gets a little bit like that. You find yourself a little bit under the pump, a little bit behind schedule. Well, the good news is, of course, that you can always catch up. I think that's one of the great confidences we can have in life. There's always time to catch up. And that may mean that we have slightly less sleep than we might like, but there is always time to catch up. Now, just a little bit of housekeeping. Tom Williamson, regards to you, young man. He incredibly has sent in a tweet questioning seventh attribute of the reasonable adventure. So we know there are six. We won't go through them again. They're quite often noted in most shows. But we did talk during last year, and Tom, I think himself, even suggested that energy should be seventh attribute. And we bestowed that honor upon it. And now he's actually asking the question, which is the seventh. So maybe the arrival of Florence has created some anomalies in Tom's thinking. But I suspect that his memory's back to goodness. So back to Florence, Jessica, Tom, and carry on. I'm sure you're doing a wonderful job. I really enjoyed thinking about what we talked about in episode 87. Getting ready to start, and resetting, and making sure you are where you want to be. And some nice feedback has been sort of filtering through the Twitter stream. And that's been really good. And as I was leading into this episode, I was thinking to myself, well, what will be this episode? I was a little unsure. Through the week, I tend to sort of write down a few themes, potential titles. I've always been somebody who, if you give me a title, I can sort of find something from that, even a paper. But this week has been a little bit bare. It's just been sort of battling to sort of keep on top of a couple of little jobs. And now they're done, I can move on with some other things. But when I look down on the paper, it's bare. There's nothing there. Anyway, I had the pleasure this afternoon of meeting up with one of my colleagues from another university, and he's a mentor to me. And it's always a very, very enjoyable conversation. And we were chatting about, at one point, education and the way it's changing, the way the world's changing and how things are. And he made an observation, very simple, without any sort of fanfare. He just said that being an educator excites him, because while we can't change the things that are happening in the world today, and we can't be responsible for a whole range of craziness that's happening out there at an individual level, we are responsible for the next generation. We all play our part as educators in shaping the next generation. And I sort of sat back when he said that, and I thought, he's 100% correct. There's absolutely no doubt about it. Educators all over the world, in all systems and at all ages, play an enormous role helping students to find themselves. And so I left my colleague, and those words were sort of like indelibly scratched into my short-term memory. And as I sat on the train coming home, I thought, he is so right. And I should talk a little bit about that tonight. I should reflect more on that and think through that process. And that sort of got me thinking back to those moments when I, as an educator, sort of found myself, I won't call it a calling because it's not about calling, but found that sense that I was helping, found that sense that I was being effective in shaping that next generation. And it's not necessarily an easy process for everybody because we all approach being an educator in different ways. Some people believe they have something of great importance to impart. Some people believe that if they sow the seeds, that they'll bear sufficient fruit in years to come. And others may be more pressed with a more immediate outcome that needs to be achieved. You know, there's an actual point that a cohort needs to have travelled to so that they're capable of engaging in the next step of the process. And so regardless of where we all sort of start from and what our motives are and how we sort of are energized by the journey, I found myself thinking, if I was going to pick a book up off my bookshelf, which book would it be? And why would I pick that book up? And the reason I make reference to book is because as a late starter to education, I've got a lot of joy out of being able to accumulate a few books and to be able to contemplate the ideas of people from anywhere from 100 years ago to a year ago, and to be able to reflect on how neat a fit that might be, to be able to reflect on the challenge of organizing yourself. And so I wanted to share with you a couple of passages from a book. It's written in 1929. And it was the book that I suppose turned me, sort of got me from being, okay, I'm just going to do this by gut feel and I think I'm helping, to, now there's actually a method to my madness. There's actually, I understand what I'm doing here. Like, there's a purpose that I'm actually trying to achieve. So it sort of took me from this novice educator to apprentice educator. I'm still obviously in that space. I think you remain in that space for a long time, maybe forever. I don't think anyone becomes a master educator because just as you become better at a particular form of practice, the world around you is changing at such a rate that even when you totally acquire a certain set of skills, they may not actually relate to tomorrow, right? That's sort of like just this constant process of change that we're all surrounded by. So I wanted to read you a couple of words from Alfred Whitehead. So the book is The Aims of Education. It's written in 1929. Sort of captures a lot of his thoughts, especially from when he left Cambridge and went to Harvard. And in the first chapter, there's this lovely sentence that really, really grabbed me. So I picked up this book. It was one of those books that someone had mentioned how influential it was to their thinking in a conference presentation. And I just wrote the name down. Alfred Whitehead, okay. And then I went back and no surprise, the book was in the library. I picked up the book, took it home, started reading, could not put it down. Because as someone who'd struggled in education, this book was saying everything that I felt to be true. And therefore, it was easy for it to shape my way of thinking about how I would organize myself. Anyway, there's a lovely little saying in here. And it says, a saying due to Archbishop Temple illustrated his meaning. Surprise was expressed at the success in afterlife of a man who as a boy at rugby had been somewhat undistinguished. He answered, "It is not what they are at 18, it is what they become afterwards that matters." And on goes Whitehead to talk about his ideas on education. And I'll just read you two passages, which, you know, as I was working my way through the first chapter, so we're on page 2 at the moment, and Whitehead says, "In the history of education, the most striking phenomenon is that schools of learning, which at one epoch are alive with a ferment of genius, and in a succeeding generation exhibit merely pedantry and routine. The reason is that they are overladen with inert ideas. Education with inert ideas is not only useless, it is above all things harmful. Except at rare intervals of intellectual ferment, education in the past has been radically infected with inert ideas. That is the reason why uneducated, clever women who have never seen much of the world are in middle life so much the most cultured part of community. They have been saved from this horrible burden of inert ideas. Every intellectual revolution that has ever been stirred humanity into greatness has been a passionate protest against inert ideas. Then, alas, with pathetic ignorance of human psychology, it has proceeded by some educational scheme to bind humanity afresh with inert ideas of its own fashioning. So, I love this because as a student, I found myself sitting in a university hall thinking, do we really need to know all these ideas? What is the point of it? We're not going to use half of this stuff. And he goes on to talk about this notion of less is more. And I think that, you know, it just grabbed me and I thought, wow, that's absolutely how I'm thinking about this. So let me give you the next passage and then I'll go on to something that's sort of a little bit more modern. The results of teaching small parts of a large number of subjects is the passive reception of disconnected ideas, not illuminated with any spark of vitality. Let the main ideas which are introduced into a child's education be few and important, and let them be thrown into every combination possible. The child should make them his own and should understand their application here and now in the circumstances of his actual life. For the very beginning of her education, the child should experience the joy of discovery. The discovery which she has to make is that general ideas give an understanding to the stream of events which pour through her life, which is her life. By understanding, I mean more than a mere logical analysis through that is included. I mean understanding in the sense in which it is used in the French proverb, to understand all is to forgive all. Pedants sneer at an education which is useful, but if education is not useful, what is it? And you could go on and read the whole book. I mean, I actually love returning to this book and thinking to myself, you know, what is it that's going to be shared? And so what I found when I discovered this book, maybe about 10 years ago, was it then led me to other works which were, you know, cut from similar cloth. And then that led me progressively along the way to other ideas which complemented and built upon these ideas and helped me to construct a particular learning environment for the next generation. And I think that's the key thing. And so when I was coming home on the train tonight, I was reflecting on my colleague's comments. My reflections took me to thinking about really what he's saying is that the only way we can be relevant is to ensure that we do a good job with the next generation. It's not what we're doing today that really matters. It what becomes of the people who that we're actually interacting with. And I had a great message on my phone today. I, as you know, published my book on The Naked Educator and Lessons Learned. And I picked up this message which came in from one of my past students. I'll read it to you because it really, I thought it was fantastic. It said, "G'day Colin, how's it going? Well done on writing the book, no small achievement. I had a random question for you. Did you keep copies of our business plans for entrepreneurship course? My computer blew up a few years ago and lost it. would be good to look back on it now and see how accurate it turned out to be. So I know that Henry's has started, gone off and started his business. And so I'll go looking for that tomorrow because it would be fantastic to find it. And then I thought to myself, I wonder how many other students wrote a plan about something that they specifically went and started. And I wonder how many of them I could then go and talk to and find out how close we actually got to the mark, or how close they got to the mark. So that's an interesting one. But the work of Whitehead has progressively led me to a way of thinking about education. It's captured really nicely in a document that's called A Transformational Vision for Education in the United States. So you could Google that and you would find this, A Transformational Vision for Education in the United States. And they talk about these five elements that they believe should be present for a transformational education. And bear in mind what we've talked about in previous weeks is that very idea, that what we're doing is transformational, that we are helping a future generation to be able to create opportunities for their own satisfaction, yeah? And so here are five components to this process. And I want you to think about from your own practice, from your children's practice, from what you've experienced personally, to what extent do you think these five components were present? The first one is competency-based, and I'm a really big believer in the notion of competency-based education, because at the end of the day, age or grade-based progression is just almost meaningless. We've almost got to the point where what does it matter? You know, I was a product of a system that let me move from grade 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 to 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 and amazingly on to 10, and then it even let me out of the building and I didn't pass any of the work. What sort of school does that to a person? What sort of school does that to anyone? That's criminal. In my mind, that is criminal. So competence-based education enables us to free ourselves from that sort of rigmarole and says, well, can you do it? Can you not do it? Right? And if you can do it well ahead of time, fantastic. Go and do something else with your time. And if you can't, well, we know where we need to do some work, eh? If you want to get you to move forward, we know what you've actually got to do some more time on. Personalised, relevant, and contextual. So I've been chatting quite a while now about heudagogical learning and about creating self-determined learning where people can create that self-negotiated action at the end. So that's a very important thing. Learner agency. From the very time I stepped into a classroom at UTAS, was how do we get the passive learners to become active? How do we get that agency to actually work for the student? Socially embedded. Look around. What is the fifth attribute of the reasonable adventurer? Yeah? Finding an uncommon interest in the commonplace. What are the resources? What are the opportunities that are right beneath your feet? Making sure students understand that. And the fact that we have this notion that it's open-walled. Now, we do this a lot in entrepreneurship education now because we have things like the Lean Startup Method. And that enables us to simply say to people, why are you here in this building? You're not going to find the answers you need. And so this notion of open-walledness, I think, is just essential. We've got the internet now. Yeah? We don't need to be stuck in classrooms to learn something. We can learn something on Saturdays and Sundays too. Yeah? We can learn something at any time of the day. We don't have to be in a classroom to learn. And so I think these are really important. I think there's really important components to actually ensuring that we can remain relevant to our students. So there's something there for you to reflect upon. And you don't need to be just merely an educator to be able to reflect on this. What is it that you do in your world that is helping the next generation? Is it your parenting? Are you volunteering at a sports club? Is there something you do in your community? Are you a mentor of sorts to some of the younger people in your work environment, right? What is it that you do that's relevant to their future? So not to now, not to what they're actually trying to achieve today, but to their future. That's what I'm going to leave you to reflect upon. It's a tough one for us all to reflect on because we don't obviously spend every minute of our day thinking about someone else's future. But when we are doing that, we want to make sure that what we're doing is meaningful, and that it's actually relevant to their future. Cheerio.